Hi, I'm Elise.
I'm Matt, and welcome to Pod Wraiths, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. If this is your first time joining us, we're two friends watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine and sharing both our deep and irreverent thoughts on our favorite Star Trek series.
This week, we're talking about Season 6, Episode 5, Favor the Bold, teleplay by Iris Siebenbeer and Hans Beimler, and directed by Winrich Kolbe, which is a name we have not heard in a while. When I was writing it, I was like, oh, I remember him.
Welcome back, Mr. Kolbe.
Yes. Favor the Bold aired on October 27th, 1997.
This week on Deep Space Nine, tired of being on the losing end of the war, Captain Sisko convinces Starfleet Command to launch a fleet of starships to retake Deep Space Nine. Meanwhile, time may be running out for Rom. Dun, dun, dun. It's all happening.
It is all happening. I'm so pumped. Like, it was really hard not to just continue into the next episode as this ends on a cliffhanger. It's just, whew.
Well, maybe you should go back in time and convince them to air it as a two-parter, like a TV movie, so we can cover it all.
That would have been really nice. I also think that Nana Visitor should have been given an Emmy for specifically her performance in this opening arc of this season. I did some Googling, and I don't think anyone ever was nominated for an acting Emmy in, like, this era of Star Trek ever. Like, it was always a special effects thing or something like that.
I don't think it got the stuff that
yeah.
it made. Yeah, I don't think a lot of Star Trek in this era of television got a lot of prestige awards, notice, or attention.
For sure.
And I think part of it was just how genre TV was, like, thought of at the time.
Right.
As, like, lesser.
Yeah.
But then also, it probably didn't help that the show was syndicated and not, like, tied to a network.
I was reading up on this because I got on my rabbit hole and I was like, oh, has anyone ever been nominated? And obviously I couldn't find anybody, but I found one of the most egregious shitty situations. I think it was like 1990. It was a special effects category, and like two different Star Trek episodes were nominated, and three other, like, non-Star Trek episodes were nominated, and they had Marina Sirtis and Michael Dorn, like, do the announcing of, like, the award, and it was a three-way tie between the non-Star Trek nominees. So, like, not only do you have your Star Trek people, and you're, like, having them do this award, their show is, like, the only ones that didn't win. Like, all the other three, like, had a tie. Ronald D. Moore said that, like, whatever channel, like, made the, or I don't know if it was CBS or whoever, sent him, like, a recording of the awards. And he's like, yeah, so I could relive this over and over in my, like, what was the point of this? So it was, like, really, like, it kind of shitty.
Yeah, totally. Speaking of being kind of shitty, how about your boy Odo?
Fucking Odo. I actually just did not delete this note from last week's episode. Or last episode. I was like, this guy, he fucking sucks. I get more into it, but, like, I was, like, yelling at him on, like, while watching this.
Yeah.
I might have said that he was too busy sucking and fucking to help his friends. Like, I was, like, real angry.
It I feel like we can leave the fucking Odo note, like, as a perma note, and we just delete it if it's, like, an episode where it's not applicable. But I feel like it's applicable for, excuse me, it's applicable for more episodes than not.
Yeah.
To be completely honest.
God. I'm so angry about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Fucking Odo. Like, and I, like, I know he's being manipulated also. Like, but I'm not letting him off the hook. Like, he... This isn't the time. Just like Wei Yun was like, this isn't the time for your family drama, like, to Ducat. Like, this isn't the time for this, buddy.
Well, and, like, the thing that, like... how do I want to phrase it? Something that I find interesting, and I think I understand why, but I'm not sure, and I want to, like, run it by you, is obviously with all the fucking and the sucking and the linking and whatever,
sorry, I think that
the female.
This was the first time I ever said sucking and fucking in my life, so I'm, like, hysterical about it. sorry, continue.
No worries, and all the linking and everything else. Obviously, the female changeling knows more about the resistance than she's acting on. Like, obviously, Rom got caught and, like, whatever.
Like, she was in Odo's room when, like, Kira came to yell at him last time. So she knows everything.
So, like, why isn't she doing something about it? Like, is it, like... Because, obviously, she still wants to win the war and wants to take the minefield down and all of this, like, strategically. But it's, like, is she enjoying sucking and fucking and linking with Odo so much that, like, it also doesn't matter to her, but sometimes it matters? Like, I don't know. It's...
You can't tell what her angle is. It's interesting. With all of it, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess she thinks Odo's more important than the entire, like, Alpha Quadrant.
That's probably true. I honestly don't remember, like, if we find out more about this in the next episode.
Yeah, I don't either, but...
Yeah.
Guess we'll find out.
Yes. While watching this episode, my roommates and I were kind of, like, wondering where the Enterprise was during all of this. Although, when we were talking, we were calling it the D, but it was the E, obviously. And I didn't... So this season is, like, about a year before Star Trek Insurrection, the movie.
Yeah.
And I haven't watched that in a really long time, but apparently there is, like, a mention of the Dominion War in that movie, like, as a thing that happened. But I don't remember.
Yeah, it's... The timeline for that is, like, nebulous, and, like, the Dominion, like, in the conflict, and, you know, Ketracel White and whatever gets a mention because it's, like, they talk about the Sona supplying White to the Dominion and whatever, but, right. Like... They're not really talk, like, it's more lip service than anything, and it's, like, the movie exists in a vacuum where it's, like, all this shit that's going on in Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
Exists, but, like, you don't feel, like, the same weightiness or whatever, so. Yeah. I know it takes place during the war, I think, but, like, you wouldn't really know it to watch it in a vacuum.
Yeah, I kind of, like... I feel like my headcanon is that they were off doing their mission still, and it was hard for them to be contacted, so that's why they're not involved. That's, like, the in-universe reason I give myself.
Yeah, and because the like, you know, Sovereign Class Enterprise E was, like, new, and they wanted to, like, keep it special or something like that. That's
we why can't you have it in other, a like, corny ass TV show, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. That's why you don't see any other Sovereign class ships there. Yeah. But if you do want to know what the Enterprise E was up to during the Dominion War and more direct conflicts, there's a couple like novels.
Yeah, we ended up looking this up, and there's actually a novelization even about these beginning this episodes arc, of Deep Space Nine, which I would like to get my hands on. But yeah.
I used to have them. I probably got rid of them a long time ago. But yeah, it was like a 4-book miniseries. Mm. And like, so book one was a DS9 book. Yeah. Book two was, like, they're basically two novel duologies that got put in a four book series, but like alternating the duologies. And yeah, it's 100% correct. The two DS9 novels were basically novelizations of this arc,
ending with the events of episode 7, I believe.
Yeah.
Which we will talk about in a little while, but not yet. I don't want to spoil the excitement.
And then I think, I think the TNG novels were something about stopping the Dominion from, like, developing artificial wormhole technology or something like that.
Yes, that is what I read as well. Like, they were going to create their, like, own wormhole to try to, like, get through, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's also, do I still have this one, or did I get rid of it?
There's some that you sent me. I have to go look through them, too.
There was a Dominion War, like, anthology of, like, short stories. And some of the TNG characters, like, appear in that. Like, I don't think it's happened yet. But so I guess, spoilers, but not because it's just a line. There's a line, and I can't remember if it's this season or next season, where it talks about Betazoid being invaded by the Dominion or occupied by the Dominion.
Yes.
And so that's one of the short stories there. And Luxana's in it, and I think Deanna might be in it.
Oh, interesting.
But yeah.
I'm just sending you. Okay, so I found the Star Trek Dominion War books were all published in 1998, except for one that was published in 2004, and they're called Call to Arms, Behind Enemy Lines, Tunnel Through the Stars, Sacrifice of Angels, Tales of the Dominion War. And I think the Sacrifice of Angels one it's book four of that group, but I think that's the one that is relating to these episodes specifically in the beginning of this season. So if anyone's interested in reading the novelization of, like, the beginning of this, it's book four of that Dominion War series, Sacrifice of Angels. I found it on Amazon for $1 million for $15. I'm going to see if I could get it on on eBay for, like, cheap.
You can also, might be worth looking up too. There's a couple, like, thrift book sites.
Yeah. I mean, I look at Star Trek books at every, like, in-person bookshop I go to also. That's, like, my new thing. Not my new thing, but, like, my current thing. I look at anything relating to, like, Star Wars or Star Trek. And then lately, I've been trying to, I decided I want to read the Sharp books, the Bernard Cornwell, the ones that I like, the Sean Bean movies. And actually, we found the first book. It's not the first book, but it's like the first movie. We found that one at the library book sale the other day.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I see the what you just sent me. It was Matt just sent me a link to a bookshop that has some of these books. Cool. I'll definitely check that out. But yeah, I'm
okay.
Do
so
read
I
that.
Lied.
You lied.
I lied. There's also another one. So in the Tales of the Dominion War, which is the short story anthology, there's one that's like Luxana's just in that one. Mm-hmm. There's a separate standalone novel that's also a TNG Dominion War novel called The Battle of Beta Zed.
Yes, we were talking about that. Sorry, yeah. That book came up in the conversation with my roommates the other day because we were looking at all of these things, and Tessa was kind of Googling while we were watching Friday night. So yeah, I definitely want to get at least this book 4 because that is the one that is specifically this story, and the website you sent me has it for $2.60. So yeah. I may have to see what the shipping is on that and look into that.
Yeah, and you don't have to worry about conversion like I do.
That's true. I'm sorry that happened to you.
Right.
I really like when we go off on a tangent that's like actually related. We're like books, but it's about this exact topic.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I separated this out as I normally do into what's going on the station and then what's happening with our friends at Starbase 375. I want to talk about the station first, if that's okay with you.
Please, please, by all means.
So we pick up pretty much like close to where we were at the end of last episode. You know, Rom's been arrested. Kira and Quark are trying to see Odo about getting Rom released. Odo's quarters are like weirdly guarded by like Bajorans, which they work for him, but also the Jem'Hadar security. And like Odo won't see anyone, and he's been busy with the female changeling for 3 whole days.
Wait, Elise, can I just jump in there? Yeah. What's he been busy doing?
Sucking and fucking for 3 whole days. Like, I get it, but also, like, this is not the time.
Yeah.
I'm never going to say sucking and fucking ever again after this. This will be the one and only time. I mean, like, this day. I'm allowing myself the whole day. I just was so angry about this.
What made you angry about it?
Well, like, we cut to the scene, and they're, like, clearly, they're, like, sitting on opposite sides of his bed, and, like, clearly, like, they're wearing clothes, but, like, it's really clear that they were, like, in the bed or whatever. And they're having this, like, philosophical conversation about sex, like, about how solids have sex, and it's, like, is this really what needs to be discussed right now? Like, he's teaching her about how solids fuck. And I'm just like, it's very intimate. And, like, in any other situation, I'd be like, this is the thirst quencher of the episode. You know, like, Rom is about to die. And that is the most important thing happening to me while watching this. And Odo just is so oblivious. And, like, he doesn't even realize how long he's been in there.
Yeah.
Like, he's completely lost track of time. And I'm just like, I understand that I don't and will never understand the link. Like, I get that. But, like, yeah. I cannot imagine just forgetting that all of this shit is happening around me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's...
like, he just doesn't realize he's being manipulated.
The amount of awareness that Odo has and doesn't have now, for me, is a little bit in question.
Yeah.
Because, like, last episode, when Kira calls him out on it, he was like, no, I remembered. I didn't forget. It didn't seem to matter. Right? Yep. So... as much as I want to much like I think Quark is doing, trying to give Odo the benefit of the doubt and say he's never been a collaborator.
Quark, I love you, baby, but like he's always been a collaborator.
To what level Odo is an active participant in his throwing his friends and the resistance and whatever under the bus for this illusion of something like greater and everything else. Yeah, I think it remains a bit of a question for me.
Yeah. It feels like negligent. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. After getting nowhere, obviously, like with trying to talk to Odo, Kira is basically spending a lot of the episode exhausting all of her options on trying to get Rom released. Like, she goes to Wayun. Wayun obviously doesn't give a shit, but he actually gives her some information and lets her know that Rom is actually going to get executed by the Dominion. So we learn that, which is terrifying. And Lita's back on the station, obviously. She's gonna meet with her husband. And, like, she's offering to get Bajoran government involved. Quark is like, the Grand Nagus will buy your freedom. And, like, I love Rom so much. He's like, okay, that's all fine, whatever. Like, none of that's actually going to happen. Quark, what I really need you to do is to finish the sabotage that I was doing. Like, you have to take out the anti-graviton beam. Listen, all y'all. Like, it's great.
Rom's just fully willing to, like, not, I don't say this in a bad way, like, oh, he's being a martyr, but, like, to, like, die for the cause and, like, knowing that there's these greater, more important things, and he's like, oh, it just rolls. I love Rom.
Rom is my favorite. I feel like he was always a great character, but I really love the confidence that he has since he's, like, working not for his brother anymore, and I think Lita has a big part of that, too, like, making him feel like he knows what he's doing. Like, I really love their relationship. He is just, he has become very sure of himself in a way that the character growth has been phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. Agreed.
Next, Kira goes to Zial, who she hasn't really talked to since she just like, you know what, I really can't hang out with you and your dad anymore. But she's, you know, Kira's not going to give up. So she goes to speak to Zial and is like, I really need you to talk to your dad about this. I felt like this part of the episode really wasn't there to get Rom out of trouble. It was there to help Zial realize that her dad was a piece of shit. And I think that's what happened here. You know, she begged her dad to go, to let Rom go. And he's just like, there's nothing I could do about it, which is decidedly not true. But yeah, Zial is just like, you are a Cardassian actually, which is like a huge insult.
Yeah. It's like Zial's been, I don't want to say walking this tightrope, but, like, living in this state of, you know, he's my father, and he helped rescue me, and so did Kira, and we can, like, all be one big, happy, extended family together.
It reminds me of that, like, Ramon song, like, we're a happy family, me, mom, and dad. Like, it's, like, very sarcastic. Find everything happening with Damar in this episode also to be quite interesting. Quark is still, like, feeding him drinks to get information, like, last episode. But he's also, I'll get to this in a little bit, but he's also, like, very obviously Dukat's, like, errand boy. And there's a lot of things that he's asked to do in this episode where I'm just like, is that even part of his job? So it kind of makes sense that he would, like, need to blow off steam and start venting and, like, telling secrets to Quark, because he's, like, I think he's feeling like I'm doing all this work and not getting recognized, and also, like, my job kind of sucks because my boss has me doing all these personal favors for him. So this whole part all makes sense to me. But yeah, Damar is, like, loose lips again and admits to Quark that they've already started deactivating the mines and it should be done in about a week. So basically they have, like, less than a week to, like, stop the wormhole from getting opened again.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have one major complaint about this episode, actually. And I say major because...
Lay it on me.
It's too perfect. The second that Quark finds out that they need to get a message to Starfleet to tell them that the mine deactivation is happening sooner, Jake rolls up and is like, I can get a message out. And it just so happens that Morn is going home for his mom's birthday and is able to put encrypted messages, like, in the ribbon around the presents for her. I realized they needed some way to, like, finally get a message out. And obviously, if Morn had been, like, coming back and forth, one of my roommates said this, like, if he'd been, like, traveling back and forth, like, a lot, it would have been a problem and they would have caught them. But, like, it just felt like kind of lazy, like, that this was how it had, like, it was just too much of a coincidence for me. I'm probably just nitpicking a little here, but that's the weakest part of the episode for me, like, the fact that it was like, oh, all of a sudden, what a great timing, we can send a message out finally when we really need to.
I feel it was a little more earned than that, because there was that scene earlier where before Kira and Quark try to see Odo earlier in the episode, where Quark's talking to Rom, or not Rom, sorry, Morn. It's like, well, you're a grown up. You don't have to go to your mom's birthday party if you don't want to. Tell her there's a war on. Blah blah blah. Yeah. Like, you know. So it wasn't like it came completely out of nowhere.
No, I got it. I think it was just the way that Jake just, like, pops into the conversation. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It just didn't fully work for me, I guess. Enough.
Totally valid. Totally valid. You're valid.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. I did like, and I mean, maybe I'm misremembering this, but when they have the idea to, like, put it in the ribbon.
Yes.
And it mourns and Quark's, and he's just, like, wrapping the presents, and it comes up, and Kira just puts the finger down.
Yep.
So he can, like, tie the bow, and then it cuts right away to, like, Sisko with the message. I just thought it was
good. I really liked that, too, and obviously we'll get into the message reaction in the next section, but I like that transition as well. It was fun because, like, honestly, it's like I grew up in a situation where, or I grew up with, like, my mom would be like, hey, Elise, come here, let me have your finger, and, like, I would put it on a present so that my mom could tie the bow. Like, that's such a normal behavior that it just felt like very cute, but in, like, a fun way. Like, everyone has a memory of their mom, like, asking, not everyone, obviously some people don't have moms, but, like, I just have a lot of memories of being like, Elise, I need you to borrow your finger for a moment. I'm kind of laughing that I was like, not everyone has moms. Like, someone's going to come after me and be like, This is how broken my brain is. Like, I can't offend everybody that doesn't have a mom about my, like, present ribbon story over here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Brains are dumb.
Yeah.
Anyway. This is when Ducat kind of crosses... I mean, he crosses lines all the time. But, like, yeah, he tries to get Damar to talk to Zial for him. And I'm just like... This is so inappropriate. Like, imagine having your, like, second in command, like, go talk to your, like, family about some family drama. It's so... Yeah, he just doesn't care about boundaries at all, Ducat.
Ducat's never met a boundary. He doesn't know
what boundaries are. No, he really doesn't. I really also hate, like... Damar is a character that I feel like I don't like him as a person, but I like his character. And he's horrible to Zial in this episode. When she's not, like, doing what he wants, he immediately starts insulting her and telling her that she should have been left to die in the Breen prison. And it really just reminded me of, like... I know it wasn't a sexual thing or whatever, but it reminds me of, like, when you're like, hey, dude, I don't think that this romance is going to work out for me, and the guy starts calling you, like, a slut. Like, that's the vibe that I got here. Like, as soon as you are you're not doing what this guy likes, he's going to just start and, like, tell you how horrible you are. And that is what Damar did to Zial, I think.
Right. Right.
Can I talk about how amazing Zial's shocked face was when Kira basically beat the shit out of Damar?
Of course you can.
It was amazing.
I'd be mad if you didn't.
So yeah, Kira was talking with Zial at the time when Damar came to, like, try to get her to come talk to Ducat, and it was so good to see him, like, really knocked out, and Zial to be like, what do we do? And she's like, we'll just leave him here. Like, what else could we do? I also really enjoyed that when Damar came to talk to Ducat and Wayoon after he came to and was like, Kira needs to be arrested for assault. And then... You see Damar's face, like, all bruised. I was laughing when Ducat immediately was like, what did you do to Zial? Like, you must have done something horrible for Kira to have done this to you. Because that's exactly, like, what happened.
Yeah.
Wayoon, of course, is just like, we don't have time for this. Like, I'm going to go talk to the female changeling. You guys talk about your nonsense without me. But yeah, Ducat will not drop it. He wants to know all of the information, what happened, blah, 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 blah. And it's just like, Ducat is so, he just feels like someone that, he just uses people to his advantage. And I feel like everything he does gives me the ick.
Yep, yep, yep. Yeah. Correct.
We get some more with the female changeling and Odo after this. And then it's really weird because Odo is... They're talking about the solids, you know, still. And she says... She basically is like... We need to get the solids to break from their love of freedom. And I think this is, like, the first time where Odo is like, this is not great, maybe. And I'm just like, Odo, it's not been great the whole time. Like, you have blinders on, basically.
Also, you're a cop.
Yeah.
So you should think it's great. I'm kidding, but
Odo, I guess, sees Kira I don't know if she's, like, walking by or whatever. I don't really remember. And then we have this whole, like, too little, too late situation between them. He, like, obviously he's calling for her, and she's not talking to him, and I wouldn't talk to him either if I were her. He tries to explain that he's been occupied, and she rails on him. She's like, we are fucked right now. Like, Rom's about to be executed, the Federation's about to lose the war, and you're fucking occupied. Like, what is wrong with you? And this is where this whole episode, but even just all of these episodes so far this season, Nana Visitor has just been so amazing. Like, she just embodies Kira so well. I just can't imagine anyone else doing this role. A plus.
Yeah.
And Odo needed to be told off. I don't think that really goes... did. And I don't think it goes far enough, honestly. But, like, also, she doesn't have time to deal with it. She has shit to do.
Odo starts to get post-snap clarity after 4 days of sucking, fucking, and linking. He's like, maybe this is bad. What do you think, Nereis? And she's like, welcome to the fucking real world, yeah, buddy.
He's having his, like, are we the baddies, meaning the changeling situation. And, like, we're just like, you've been the baddies the whole time, Odo.
Oh, my accent just came out really thick. That's okay. Holy fuck is shit there, buddy. Pitter patter, let's get at her. Okay.
Jesus Christ. I haven't watched Letterkenny in like forever. Do you have anything to say about the station before we move on to Starbase 375 and all of our Federation crew?
We don't deserve Rom.
I think that's true. I mean, you and I personally do, but like... maybe no one else. I'm just kidding. I love Rom so much.
Oh, I have another closing thought.
Yes, please.
I endorse sucking and fucking and linking for 3 or 4 days straight. As long as it doesn't, you know, increase the spread of fascism somewhere.
Oh, yeah, I totally.
Missing yes. your other obligations.
Yes, if there
just
was...
Just to be clear.
Yeah, if there was, like, not... If there weren't lives at stake, you know, have fun. Yeah, this is a pro...
Do you want to say sucking and fucking and fucking and sucking one more time?
Yes, this is a pro sucking and fucking... podcast.
Oh my god.
I love it. All right.
We start in media res with the Defiant under attack. It's steaming. They're gassing releases. It is not looking good for the crew of the USS Defiance under the command of Commander Jadzia Dax. And then...
Excuse me. On the bridge, she's captain.
I said I'm sorry.
I'm just teasing because you called her commander. I'm enjoying the setup you're giving us, so please continue.
Just when it appears all hope is lost... And a ship decloaks. Who is it? What is it? It's a bird of prey. It's the Imperial Klingon ship Ratarin, under command of General Martok, with Lieutenant Commander Worf in second in command, coming to rescue his love.
Oh, I love that you started that out, like, very, like... It wasn't, like... Clone Wars narrator level, but like at the end, but at the end you had like been you like started off more like severe, and then by the end you were like telling a love story, and I just enjoyed how your tone changed over time. That was great.
You know, I do have an improv audition later this afternoon, nice. Or later this evening. So
you got to keep it fresh.
Got to practice, yep. Right? Yeah, no, totally. Exactly.
We had, when we were watching some Star Wars at home, we made Ryan read the scroll in that voice. And then we went to go see, Revenge of the Sith recently. In the theater, and like we were joking that he should get up in the front of the theater and do it for everyone. But obviously, we did not disrupt anybody, but we wanted him to.
There are heroes on both sides.
Oh, wow. Oh my god, the waves on my garage band were real high for that one. I had to, like, back up from the microphone.
Just blowing out the levels. Pretty much. Blowing out the levels.
Okay, so the morale's down with our friends. You know, the Dominion is kind of, they're kind of winning here. And as O'Brien describes it, we're in an engage, retreat cycle. I say we're because we are part of this crew. Like,
yeah.
Matt and I are, like, on the show.
Well... You know why the morale's down in relationship to that? Because engage, retreat, that's the exact opposite of sucking and fucking.
It really is. No one is sucking and fucking on the Defiant, honestly, which is sad. Everyone is going to go meet back at Starbase 375, and we find Dax telling Sisko, like, this fucking sucks. No one's happy. We need to do something about this. And Sisko is like, hey, I agree. We're going to take back Deep Space Nine. And I'm
finger
like,
guns.
And I'm like, this is a great idea. I want everyone back on the station again. And I don't want Dukat there. Wei-Yun can stay because he is funny. But really, he shouldn't be there either.
We'll just get one of Jeffrey Combs' other characters.
Yes. Oh, God. We've been watching season one of Enterprise, and I love him in that show so much. Like, that's one of his favorite characters of his, Shran. Love it. Or Shran. I never remember.
The Andorian.
Shran. He's great.
S-H-A-R-A-N? Shran?
I don't know. Whatever. I thought it was S-H-R-A-N, maybe.
Maybe that. No, that sounds right. He's that great line. I think it's the third season of Enterprise where they're doing, and it's like, no one runs from the Andorian Mining Consortium when they're like doing the undercover kind of thing, I think, against the Zindi.
We have not met the Zindi yet. But yeah, Jeffrey Combs is great. But yeah, so Sisko's plan hinges on the Dominion just wanting to attack the wormhole, not Earth, because the wormhole is the key to the Alpha Quadrant. So he, as part of it, he's like, we can hopefully get the Klingons, but like more of our fleets together to do this. And Martok comes in with some bad news. Tells Sisko and Admiral Ross that Gowron is, like, not into this plan at all. He doesn't want to risk it. He thinks it's a bad idea. And now Martok and Worf, so it's basically Gowron's most trusted ally and one of his biggest enemies, must go and tell him that this is the only option. And they're hoping that because someone he loves and someone he hates is telling him, that he'll realize that he has no other choice. So I'm curious how that goes. I don't actually remember. I assume we'll find out in the next episode. Because they didn't come back by the end.
Yeah, wonder what's going to happen there.
Yeah. As mentioned earlier, Sisko gets the secret message from Morn on the ribbon. So basically they find out the minefield is going to get taken down before any sort of reinforcements have time to get there. So even if they do, if Martok and Worf are successful, the Klingon fleet and even the fleets that are around Earth, protecting Earth. Like, if they, when they get there, it'll be too late as well. They are going to have to retake the station immediately. But I do love when Admiral Ross was, like, questioning the intel. Like, is this trustworthy? Sisko was like, I've known the courier for 5 years. And I just, like, love that he trusted Morn, like, no question. Like, that was... It didn't even occur to him that Morn, like, wouldn't be trustworthy. I mean, who's Morn going to tell? He doesn't talk out loud.
No, he never shuts up. That's the problem. He just talks your ear off screen. One of my greatest long-running bits.
One of my favorite parts of this episode was the conversation between Ross and Sisko. It's their last scene of the episode. And they're talking about Bajor, and Sisko is going on about how beautiful it is and how he's basically convinced. He's like the Bajoran travel tourist board or whatever. And he's like trying to convince Ross that he should go there and visit. And he's explaining all the things he loves about Bajor. And Ross is like, it's really going to be hard for you to say goodbye when your time at Deep Space Nine is over. And, excuse me, Sisko surprises him, and I think us, temporarily, although I think it all makes sense, that he's like, no, Sisko is intending to live on Bajor for the rest of his life. He is going to build a house on Bajor. That planet will be his home. He will still work in Starfleet. This is his intention right now. He will still work in Starfleet. He will go wherever they send him. But when he goes home, he's going to go to Bajor, not Earth. And I think it all makes complete sense to me.
Yeah.
Besides the fact that he's fallen in love with this planet and he likes the people. I mean, he is their emissary. And I think that is something that is always in the back of his mind. And I think as time goes on, he believes it more and more.
Yeah, he's completely rebuilt his life there. And, like, just thinking of, like, where he is now in his relationship, you know, to Bajor versus, like, his relationship with even himself, mm-hmm. where he was when he first got the assignment and emissary and, you know, thinking of leaving Starfleet and everything else and still living in that place of, like, eternal, like, you know, grief of Jennifer's death yep. and everything else. It's like... Yeah, I totally get it.
I know we haven't seen Cassidy for a while. But, like, I'm sure she'd be fine with this, too. Because she works in, like, she... This is her neighborhood of where she works. So I feel like that it all makes sense. Sometimes I want to live on Bajor. Really, it's really pretty.
Me too.
The episode kind of wraps up with Nog on the Defiant coming to tell Chief O'Brien that he's been promoted to ensign, which is very exciting. And then Sisko comes aboard and Dax gives command of the Defiant back to Sisko. And then they find out that they don't find out. It's mentioned that they're basically outnumbered. The Federation's outnumbered by the Dominion 2-1. And then we all Leo point at Sisko as he says, fortune favors the bold, which is the title. Favor the bold is the episode title. And we have a to be continued.
Dun, dun, dun.
I loved this episode. I may actually, like, watch it today and then rewatch it right before we record it.
Do it. Do it. Now it's time for the Altair Water Thirst Quencher. Altair Water first being mentioned in Star Trek and Star Trek III. Also possible to Alta from Altair 4 in Forbidden Planet. Are you thirsting for anyone this week, Elise?
As said earlier, if Odo was maybe blowing off dinner with friends, and that was the extent of it, the sucking and fucking would have been hot. But because it was bringing on more fascism, no, I'm not thirsting in this episode.
Yeah. I think the only people really hoarding this episode are warhawks who just want war.
Yeah, for sure.
My nominee for the most Star Trek thing is we have a grouping of random admirals that we've never seen before and will likely never see again, and one of them's a Vulcan.
Yeah, that's fair. I forgot that even happened. I've been enjoying Admiral Ross, though. Like, I like his involvement. I'm kind of happy that we've been... I don't remember what happens in the future, but I do like that we have this admiral that seems to be mostly on the same page as our faves.
Yeah.
Because admirals in Star Trek often can turn out to be baddies. It happens from time to time.
Admirals,
yep.
Badmirals.
Not to be confused with Fayed O'Dare's Dadmiral. I don't really have a most Star Trek thing of this episode. Except that we have maybe the fact that it was a to be continued on a big plot. That's all.
Yeah. Well, until next time, Elise, where can folks find more of you on the internet?
You can find me on Blue Sky, Letterboxd, and Storygraph at Chicken Tendi. That's T-N-D-I. You can find links to my True Blood podcast, Fang Bangers Pod, on Blue Sky and Instagram at Fang Bangers Pod. That's bangers with a Z or Z. You can find links to my James Bond podcast, Pay Attention 007, on Blue Sky and Instagram at Pay Attention 007 Pod and at moviejawn.com. That's J-A-W-N. And you?
Yeah, you can find me on, let me scroll down, because I forgot where you can find me. You can find me on Blue Sky and Letterboxd at Maddie Hugh, M-A-T-T-Y-H-U-G-H. And you can also catch me writing about non-Star Trek things so far on moviejawn.com. You can catch Elise and I together on Blue Sky and Instagram at PodRace, and you can also email us at podrace@gmail.com.
Please remember to rate and review us on the podcatching system of your choice. Thank you again to our editor, Melissa, and to DJ Empirical for our interstellar theme song.
And until next time, computer and program.
Bye.